Because this doesn't look at all weird.
Can we start there where you're just laughing?
No. Confused?
Too bad. We're starting there anyway.
Damn.
Weekly update from Australia with
Scott with again.
Scott again. So we did the one in Hawaii. When it was the start of May, wasn't it? No, April. Because I went over on April Fool's.
Yes.
So it must have only been about a month ago. The one that you and I did in Hawaii, I don't know if you saw any of the comments, but like loads of people were like, Scott's really awesome, you should have
him on here. And I thought I was going somewhere else.
No, just
never
kidding.
Never do this again.
No, actually, it was actually really positive. And I think that it was positive because there are a few things that we didn't argue about, but they were good
healthy discussions.
Healthy discussions. So I put some of those in the list for today. But just for scene setting, we're on the Gold Coast because you're here to do NDC security next week.
Yep.
Which is cool. So we've been doing a lot of NDC things lately. We both did NDC London. We went to Oslo. We did NDC Oslo. We've now got NDC security, which is in one of the buildings just over there.
Oh, nice.
Which we actually can't see it from here. It's called the QT. It's just beneath there, but we're sitting at the back of my house at the moment. We could have been inside with all the like awesome light setup and everything, but it kind of seemed like a waste. And I kind of wanted to see you just sweat a little bit more in the sun as well.
Sunshine.
So for people watching, I mean, they probably see I take a lot of photos of this environment and everything. I'm interested in hearing from you, since we're going to do the banter thing. Is this what you thought Australia would be, or is this different?
It's more green. I thought it would be kind of more barren. You know, with it being so hot and kind of so hot. But no, it's great. It's like kind of tropical almost.
Right, because we went up the mountain today and it was like rainforest and stuff like that.
Literally rainforest and stuff, yeah. I was quite surprised.
We also brought back beer and we are actually...
like barrels. It comes in barrels.
We're not recording this early in the day when I normally would. I mean, it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon or something now.
Honest.
Makes it okay. Now, yesterday I did take you somewhere much more deserty. So how was that?
Yeah. That was literally desert island style, with lots of the little crabs, like a thousand.
Crabs.
Yeah, I'll put a video on Twitter. Actually, it's like a thousand crabs just like flocking across the beach. That was awesome.
And I was joking about this before you came, but you have actually been bitten by things as well, right?
Yeah.
Don't show your legs.
No, I'm not
on the camera because the white balance will totally throw it out.
The reflective qualities.
But you've been bitten by a bunch of things, and you got thrown off the jet ski as well, which was from my perspective.
I'm glad that we've changed it from I fell off the jet ski to you threw me off.
Well,
we've
clarified. Let's not sugarcoat it. So we should actually get on with some stuff. Now, when we're here, we've got NDC. Obviously, we've got a couple of days of workshops and then the conference. One of the things that you and I are doing a bit of now is you're doing a bunch of my Hack Yourself First workshops in other parts of the world. Yesterday, whilst we were sitting on the desert island, we sat down and we wrote out a bunch of more info about what it is that you do, and also the public workshop schedule as well. So on the workshops link on my blog, you'll see the upcoming events. So the ones we know of is that I'm doing the one here, and then the one in Oslo. You're doing one where after that?
So public one, the first one is SteelCon in July, which is in Sheffield in England. Close to my hometown, which is going to be good actually. SteelCon's a great conference. They've actually got 2 days of professional training, then a day of like free workshops included, and then the conference itself. So if you do all of them, it's a 4-day event. And if you pay for the 2-day training at the start, you actually get the workshop day and the conference free as well. So it's like the whole package for less than a grand, which is
pretty good because normally you'd pay well over a grand just for a workshop.
Yeah, for a conference ticket.
When we say grand, this is 1,000 GBP.
Sorry,
right?
Yeah, GBP. So it's like 1,200 US.
Okay. So for folks in the UK, that's the public one coming up. And then I'll have a public one in NDC in Sydney as well. So I'm trying to sort of reduce the amount that I'm doing in different places because I don't really want to leave here. And plus, as you now know, it's a bloody long way to come here, isn't it?
It is. Oh, man. Long haul.
It's harsh. I guess that there's the public listings that are there. You've got multiple private ones coming up from private customers as well. So if anyone wants to do those, we can get Scott to go there. Particularly, you're doing a lot in Europe.
Yeah.
I've just had 4 days of doing a remote one. I did 4 half days. So you've been battling jet lag. I've been battling 4 a.m. starts every day to do this. But fortunately, I hope you're just about over your jet lag. I'm now done with the early starts as well. All right, so the workshops are there. Now, the other thing that we've been working on is Report Your RI. So you and I were discussing that a lot on the desert island yesterday too. Do you want to just give a bit of an overview? Because I think one of the things that surprised a lot of people is the volume of reports that go through there at the moment. So what are we seeing sort of report volume-wise?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty spiky business, but looking over the course of like a month, because we can nicely aggregate the stats over a month, we're averaging around 8 billion at the minute, and that grows by probably a few hundred million a month as well. So I imagine by the end of this year, we'll be pushing close to 10 billion reports per month.
Which is pretty insane when you hear those yeah. numbers. Now, I mean, we're managing to deal with that volume by offloading a lot of those at Cloudflare. So everyone gets sort of 10,000 reports for free every month, regardless of your tier.
Yep.
And we can then put a rule at the Cloudflare side and say, look, even if one person comes along, totally screws up their CSP and just like it effectively attempts to DDoS us off the planet, yeah. there's a rule at Cloudflare which just goes, nah, block anything over X. So I think that's really cool because everyone gets a lot of reports. Number one, that's cool. Number two, we get to use Cloudflare in a really, really neat way.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's obviously taking a lot of load off that back-end injection server side of things where we would actually have to receive HTTP requests and process them and then reject them.
I think that's the thing as well because it literally directly helps us keep our costs down because we get like really hammered and we can see things like spool up at the start of the month and then as people use their quota, our traffic tails and we can scale back down. So
well, that's an interesting point too because every customer sort of rolls over, whether they're free or paid, they roll over on the first of the month and midnight. Everyone gets a hammer. So our traffic is like flat and then it just goes shump like that.
Yep.
And then people start burning down. And then it tapers off very quickly, and now we're blocking, you know, 90% plus of reports anyway.
It's literally, like, I mean, we in the last major update that we did when we introduced the worker, we now have to stage the refreshing of quotas. So we actually do them in batches every 10 minutes now because we used to reset everybody at midnight UTC. And we now have too many people to do that. So we grab batches of thousands of customers and then do them every 10 minutes. So, they slowly get introduced in.
So I actually honestly didn't know that. Was this because if you let them all back in at once, you just suddenly just get smashed?
Yeah, literally, because by the end of the month, we're filtering like close to 90% of the inbound reports because most people are over quota. And then we just reset them all at like 000 UTC. And it's just like open the fire hose.
Which would then mean like a tenfold increase of traffic.
Oh, yeah, just instantly.
Yeah,
okay. So we can't, realistically, unless we were to like pre-scale, we can't let that hit us and then wait to scale. Even though it's fast and there is like a slightly degraded service with that floodgate. So we now slowly stagger that back in.
So one of the things you and I have been discussing a lot, and this isn't sort of Report Your Eye specific, I guess, but just more architectural pattern, is the amount of control you can get by running code on the edge. Because you did a Cloudflare Workers webinar, you did a few blog posts on Cloudflare Workers. So trying to push logic out to the edge, which effectively is, at least as of yesterday, 151 different edge nodes around the world. Today it's probably 153 or something. But being able to run that code on the edge and make programmatic decisions about what actually then gets routed through for Report Your RI has just been massive. For Have I Been Pwned, it's been massive as well.
I mean, that's literally where we're getting all of our filtering for our people over quota. We now do JSON parsing at the edge. So, you know, if we're getting payloads that aren't valid JSON, we'll just toss that away. We don't even can't even do anything with that.
And what you're saying there is you can decide at the Cloudflare level whether that request is even valid and should go to
use up our bandwidth and resources and everything else. Yeah.
You're doing cause responses pre-flight as well.
Yeah. So we do that from their edges now. I actually wrote the blog about that. So when I was at the airport in Germany a few weeks ago, I was testing it because I put my subdomain onto the new worker and I left yours on the old system, and then I was hitting the same report on both of our subdomains and typing the differences. And to go from like Germany to our origin, which is in San Fran, or just to Germany to like Frankfurt, it was like 600 milliseconds faster to get the cause response.
And in simple terms, so this is the browser making an options request, effectively saying, are you going to allow us to implement a cross-origin request? So rather than that going all the way to the origin and then having the origin respond, well, we can just respond from the edge anyway, because it's always going to be, it's fine, here's our cause policy.
And that's the thing, right? It's like ours is fairly simple because we always say yes, but even if it wasn't the case for your program or application, you could just put that logic at the edge as well. So
I did that with Pwned Passwords the other day. I think I told you because I just went to your blog post and I copied and pasted
the code. Stole my worker code. Copyright.
Thank you for that. Do read the code before you copy and paste it as well. What happened in this one when they didn't read the code?
We just stack overflow it. It's fine.
So there's a tangent there. Scott and I did this this thing with Nissan a couple of years ago where there was a vulnerability in one of the APIs. And you can Google my name and Nissan and you'll see all the details.
I'm sure they'd love that.
But, we'll move on past that. But when Nissan, so they took the app offline and then they put it all back online, and it took them quite a while, didn't it? Mm. Finally put it back online, and within the UI of the app, they had literally copied and pasted code from Stack Overflow, and it was something like the spirit of Stack Overflow is coders helping coders.
Yep.
And you're here trying to manage the air conditioning in your car as a normal everyday consumer, reading about how coders help coders on Stack Overflow. And then you did that blog post. Did you do a blog post or was it media?
No, I think I just tweeted about it and it ended up being picked up by the press.
So you found the Stack Overflow post.
Yep.
But did you ever notice, so on Stack Overflow it was the spirit of,
and then
the application it said the sprit. So does this mean that they didn't copy and paste it? It was even worse, they read it there and then they just retyped it.
And typoed it on the way. Man.
We have long and illustrious careers ahead of us. Anyway, okay, now moving on to other things. You were involved with the Browse Aloud situation a few months ago.
Yeah.
So this was a Browse Aloud accessibility tool. It was embedded in a heap of different websites, a lot of different government websites, dynamically loading script off the Browse Aloud servers. Someone owned what seems to be one of their storage accounts, injected CoinHive CryptoMiner into it, managed to get CryptoMiner on just a whole heap of government websites.
Yeah.
And at the time, you and I both said that, like, this is a good use case for SRI, Sub Resource Integrity, which I think last week I mentioned is now available in Edge 17 as well, so we can stop saying that Microsoft doesn't support it. They've finally caught up with that, which is good. So that was good. I noticed the NHS, so I think it was the NHS in Scotland, I looked at their website the other day, they've now got SRI on Browse Aloud.
And I think a lot of the change in stance there comes from Browse Aloud, because originally they were saying, do not, you know, self-host this file, you must dynamically link it from us. And, you know, if, like, you implement a vendor product and install it, you follow the instructions,
right?
So it's kind of like, not like anti-SRI in that they didn't like it, but it was very SRI unfriendly. And now that this has happened, they've said we have versioned, like, dependencies available and you can statically link them and SRI them, which...
So Browse Aloud themselves have said you can SRI it.
Yes, they now provide versioned links with the script tag with the SRI snippet already inside it, which is good.
Because that was what worried me a little bit in the first place, because if you use SRI, which says that this is the exact hash of the file, and if it changes one character, it's just not going to run it at all. If the provider of the file didn't make a commitment that it wouldn't change, then you'd potentially break things.
You really do have to version the path. And I think... one of the really interesting things was people say, oh, yeah, okay, so, you know, if we just link to, like, /latest/package.js, whenever the vendor updates their product, like, we automatically get the update, so we don't need to do anything. And I'm like, that's great, but what if it's, like, a breaking change or not compatible with something? It's like you're letting them deploy their new code into your production site with no testing or QA or anything. So I was like, there's benefits and drawbacks both ways, as there always is with security stuff, but I think statically linking the version with SRI is pretty... robust.
Yeah. Okay. So that's good news. They've made some progress there. So the other thing, and you and I are just chatting about this because this sort of unfolded a little bit today as well. James Burton and his EV cert. Now, you and I talk a lot about EV, and we both talk a lot about it with each other and obviously in conferences as well. Tell these guys what's happened with James, his cert, and why this is a problem.
So he has a company legally registered. He has a company.
Do you have TV, bro?
I know, I don't do. Come on, I don't do the camera stuff. Face radio. He has a legally registered company in the UK. All good and valid. He applied for an EV certificate, got one.
What's the name of the company?
The name of his company doesn't really matter. Yeah, he has a legally registered company called Identity Verified.
Okay, so the company is called Identity Verified.
Yeah.
But it is legally registered, follows all of the patterns and practices,
everything
whatever in the UK.
Everything is done properly, legally registered. Went to get an e-visa and said, hey, this is my company, here's our registration documents, here's all of the legal stuff. Certificate issued, there you go, thank you very much, we'll take your money. And he was using it, and then he woke up one day and it was broken.
Right, because it got revoked.
Because it got revoked, yeah. So the CA I don't know if they have like some ongoing process or someone told them, or how they later come to the decision, actually, we don't like this certificate anymore. This might not be great. So we're just going to pull that back off you and revoke it.
So I mean, we can be straight about it amongst friends. This was Komodo. Komodo revoked the certificate. So what you're saying is that they let the thing run for a week with an EV cert issued to a valid legal entity which met all the criteria for having an EV cert. That's why they got it in the first place.
Yeah.
What was the reason Komodo gave for the revocation of the cert?
Compliance.
Are you finished?
Yeah.
And then what? So but this was the thing. It basically said compliance issues. And I think the thing that worries us, and there was the issue before with Ian Carroll. So Ian Carroll registered a company called Stripe. He's in the US, so he registered it. I can't remember if he registered it in Delaware or...
He registered it in Kentucky.
He registered in Kentucky, but Stripe, the payment process was Delaware.
Yes.
So what can happen in the US is you can have two different companies registered in different states, but with the same name.
Yeah.
So he had a registered legal entity, Stripe Inc. He went and got an EV cert, and then he stood up a site so that in your browser it says Stripe Inc., mm-hmm. depending on your browser, because this is just a client
and
visual
indicator. And your
platform. And your platform. If it's not Chrome on iOS, so Chrome on iOS with an EV cert would just put HTTPS and it will look just like a DV cert.
Yeah.
Safari on iOS will just put the name of the company and it won't even put the URL.
Mm-hmm.
So if you enter this, say on my iPhone just here, you would see in Safari it just says Stripe Inc. Yes. And then on the Stripe Inc. page, Ian sort of said, EV is broken, this is not actually Stripe Inc. That got revoked by Komodo.
Yes.
And he was a bit upset about that. So he went and got one from GoDaddy. What happened to the GoDaddy one?
They issued it and then... although actually, to be fair, they revoked it a lot faster. They took it off him like a week after or something like that.
But you've still got a week of having a certificate which in retrospect, based on their criteria, was not something that should have been issued in the first place.
Well, this is the thing though, because it... Like, I guess the one point to clarify is that issuance is a technical criteria, and you know that's a binary state, right? If you meet the criteria, you issue. To say that it shouldn't have been issued in the first place would have made that a misissuance, which meant the CA would be in trouble for having issued it.
Right.
So this is the kind
so
of the
that would then
22.
Be a compliance issue on their behalf.
Correct.
So what they're saying is that it met the criteria, which is why we gave it to you. If it didn't meet the criteria and we gave it to you, we'd be in trouble.
Correct.
Later on, we've decided that it didn't not meet the criteria, but there was something else we didn't like about it.
Yes. And this is kind
makes
of the
perfect sense.
This is just kind of the thing that bugs me, right? It's, you know, like we're walking into muddy waters with the whole, does this look good? Does it look bad? Are you a nice person? Are you just doing this for fun? It's like, well, you know, it's technical criteria.
Yeah.
EV's a legal company, you know, check all these boxes. Here's your certificate. I think to take that back is just... I don't know, it seems a bit shady.
So moving on with the James situation, and James has written a blog post on this as well. I'll link to James's blog post.
Mm.
The issue we have is that the revocation seemed to be arbitrary and made on the basis of CAs thinking that this makes them look bad, as opposed to anything else of any tangible nature. Now, just to be clear as well, in the Ian situation, Komodo later wrote a blog post, or whatever you call it that Komodo does, apologising to Ian and offering to give him a new cert.
Yeah.
So clearly it was made in error. In fact, in that blog post, they said there was a staff member who wasn't properly trained and made the wrong decision. We apologise and we're going to train people better. Is the situation with James and his identity verified EV cert, is it different to Ian? Because this is the same company, only just after having said no, he screwed up, now revoking another one that seems very similar.
I can't see, like, the only difference between them is that with Ian's certificate, it just happened to, his company just happened to have the same name as another company, whereas with James's, his company is called Identity Verified. So other than that, they're identical.
In fairness, when we say just happened, obviously Ian very deliberately wanted to demonstrate the weakness with EV.
Maybe.
He literally said that on the website. It's like, I want to demonstrate.
But this is kind of the point, right? Like, you can't guarantee that every company in the world has a unique name. So we have to accept the fact that
So the difference then seems to be that Komodo originally did the revocation of Ian's certificate based more on the intent of the site as opposed to the technical criteria.
But then the intent of the site was clearly outlined on the site. You know,
I know.
It's like,
I know it was, but what I'm saying is they didn't like it.
Yeah, that's what it comes back to. And which is, I guess, why there's no solid reason in the emails explaining that.
Okay, we could spend a lot of time on that one.
Oh, yes.
Actually, on that, and just off the top of my head, this wasn't in my notes, but there have been a number of blog posts, this is while we're on the whole HTTPS thing, about people who are not, how can we put this charitably, not particularly fond of securing the things.
Yes.
I would really like you, and I would like people to encourage Scott, to write something taking the blog post. There is a video of one of them. There is also the reincarnated psychic and the SEO dude.
Pajama man.
The guy, I'm not allowed to say that. I got in trouble for saying pajamas.
Why?
I don't know.
He was wearing pajamas. I know. That's okay. It's like me calling you sunglasses man right now. You're okay.
Let's not go there. I would love to see you write something that just takes all of these crazy observations of HTTPS, because I mean you go a lot deeper onto TLS and everything than what I do, so I think you're in a better position to do it, but I'd love to see you just write it and just pick these things apart, because there's arguments along the lines of Google is driving HTTPS because they're trying to create some sort of a monopoly on the market, and like it's just non I know it's nonsensical stuff. You should write this up. And
oh, it's like Netscape Navigator 2 guy today as well.
Oh yeah, so what was that one?
Like HTTPS is bad because it doesn't work in like Netscape Navigator 2 on Mac something something 1964 version.
Okay, so you have material. Okay, so moving on. I forgot to mention something last week, and I want to make sure that I put it in here. The reason I forgot to mention it is because I put a blog post out on a Saturday morning, so it was Saturday before last, which is a little bit unusual for me, because I normally do stuff during the week when people are actually awake and reading stuff. And this was about me deprecating any of the pwned passwords API endpoints that don't ensure anonymity. So originally, you could query pwned passwords via a plain text password or via a SHA-1 hash of a password. And then in Feb, we came along and did this K-anonymity thing with Cloudflare, and now you just search for the first 5 characters of the hash of the password, and then it returns all the suffixes. And that's gone nuts. That's gone really, really awesome. I've got to talk about that in a moment, actually. Because it has been so successful, and because it's also a lot faster than searching individual hashes, because the individual hashes go down to table storage and they pull it out. Okay. Plus, how many individual SHA-1 hashes do you have? How many characters have you got? And then it's to the 16 to the... it's just a massive, massive number. Whereas the K-anonymity, you've only got 16 to the power of 5 different possible SHA-1 hash prefixes.
Okay, yeah. You just search on the prefix.
So I'm getting more than 90% cache hit ratio on Cloudflare at the moment. Dude, you're in my house now. Cache hit ratio. So we're getting a lot of stuff not served from the origin. And the thing is that makes it super, super fast. And the anonymity stuff is really valuable. So anyway, I wrote about deprecating the effectively any endpoint that didn't give an assurance of anonymity as the K-anonymity range search model does. So on the 1st of June, I'm going to kill off that old model. I want to keep talking about it and raising it over and over again until I get to that point so that people don't get left short. I am still seeing a lot of requests go to the endpoints that take a password or a hash. I don't have people register or give me personal data.
I was just going to say, are they all anonymous endpoints? So yeah, if they don't register, you can't contact them, I guess.
Well, I could figure out the IP address, but no, you know, what are you going to do then?
I just wondering if they were registered, like it would be.
No, and like by design, I didn't have them register because I didn't want to add a barrier to entry, and I didn't want to sort of go, here's all the data you can take anonymously. Now please give me your information. This wasn't the plan. So anyway, I'm going to kill that off on the 1st of June. Now, one thing that I did write this week, now you actually came here Tuesday night and we've been very, very busy with cybers and jet skis since then. But on Monday, I wrote a blog post which was titled "The Decreasing Usefulness of Positive Visual Security Indicators and the Importance of Negative Ones." Now, I really want to get your thoughts on this as well, because I know you've got a lot to say about it. This was in response to Barclays Bank in the UK, who ran this ad. In fact, I'm going to look at exactly what the ad said. I'm only going to read the blog post. So anyway, they ran this ad. It was last year, late last year. And
it was Christmas, right? Because it was...
It was in the lead up to Christmas, because they were trying to... Look, they had admirable objectives.
Yeah.
They were trying to reduce the rate of phishing attacks. But one part of the ad, it had like this toy robot, and the toy robot saying, you know, come and buy me now. And then he stops and he gets kind of sad. and he says, look in there, you need a padlock when you pay for stuff. And the robot's pointing up at the browser. If there isn't one, a padlock, the website could be fake. And we're all going, but that's not what it means, right? And look at all of these phishing sites that have certificates. Because now that certificates are free and ubiquitous and all this sort of thing, it's very, very easy to get them for a phishing site. Now, that the relevance of this, in fact, actually back at the time, I don't know if you knew this, but I registered a domain and I was going to write something on this domain, and it's you can actually go there now. It's called Totally Trustworthy Site Because It Has a Padlock.com. Dashes between each word. That now redirects back to my blog. So I registered that back in November and I was going to do a whole thing about how it's not trustworthy. But the Advertising Standards Authority in the UK beat me to it and they've outlawed the ad because they've said the ad is misleading because just seeing the padlock doesn't mean that you can trust the site.
Anything.
Now, let's argue on something for a little bit because you don't like it when I use the word trust, do you?
Well, the word trust has been overloaded in like the TLS space for a very long time anyway. And I think if we talk of real world trust and trust in online encryption, they are slightly different concepts. You know, there's no visual indicator in the browser that you can look at and say, I therefore trust this site in the context that we would think of trust. And that's kind of the problem, is we're using a word that has a different meaning in that space to like average everyday person's meaning. Mm. So yeah, I think to use the phrase trust, you have to then clarify exactly what that means, and then we're like on a slippery slope down.
So I guess my position on the blog post was that, and I think you agree on this as well, you can't let's not use the T word, but as an individual consumer, you can't just make the assumption that just because there is a padlock, this is a website that you should go and enter your credit card details
into. No, not at all.
And my premise was that because of the ubiquity of positive visual indicators, even on malicious sites, and when I say positive visual indicators, I'm saying this broader than just padlock, because we see things like, you know, Norton logos and shield and things like this on pages, right? Which is a bitmap, and anyone can put it there. So I guess the point is that it is easy to either fabricate or represent a positive visual indicator for a site that has malicious intent. So we can't just rely on that. And I was talking more about we need to focus more on the negative visual indicators. And in fact, I'll give you examples in this blog post of phishing sites that have been stood up with HTTPS. Someone will tweet it to me. It's in the middle of the night. By the time I get up and look at it, it's already flagged by Chrome. And you go there and it's just like a massive red page. Now, I guess my point is that when you see a massive red page which says, don't trust this site, it's a phishing site, that's crystal clear.
Yeah.
When you see a site that has a padlock or a logo or something on the page and says, trust me, that can be fabricated. And we've got to shift the focus from the expectation of positive visual indicators to build trust, for want of a better term. And we've got to shift that to when you see something negative, you've just got to get the hell out of there.
Yeah. And that's a very long process. And it's a process that's actually already underway in many respects, especially after we saw Emily's talk at Locomoco in Hawaii like a month or two ago. You know, they're starting the process of degrading that UI right now.
So to talk about that, and I touched on it in the blog post, but I want you to sort of express it in your terms as well. So what's Chrome doing with that UI?
So very slowly what they're trying to do is take away all the positive indicators, right? So, you know, right now we look for the padlock, we have the little secure, what do they call it? The secure chip, like the little thing that they have in Chrome, they call it the secure
handbag.
Chip. Yeah, well, the handbag's inside the chip, so yeah, the handbag.
Oh, so they call that space next to the address bar.
So, like the green box where it says secure, it's just referred to as the secure chip.
Oh, so it's just an area of the browser.
Yeah,
okay.
And what they're kind of doing is they're taking that away. So they want to go from, like, you know, big green padlock with the word secure down to just the padlock, and then eventually take the padlock away.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll get to the point. Is that a big fish? we'll get to a point where there's a shark coming for us. It's all fine.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
Sorry, gun.
No. So they're doing this. This kind of trial, and it's actually behind a flag in Chromium. I sent a tweet out, maybe I'll retweet it, or you can link into it, where you can actually go into the Chrome flags pane, and you can, you know, they've already built this functionality in, and you can enable it behind a flag now to see what it might look like if this goes ahead and continues to work. So it takes away the secure chip, which is also where the EV text goes. They just replace the word secure with the company name. So you can get rid of that and then get rid of this whole like extra box, and it just compresses down to eventually just the website, just the scheme, and then the rest of the URL.
But is the scheme going to stay? Because on one of her slides, she was talking about removing the scheme when it is HTTPS.
Yeah, because they'll introduce a negative indicator when it's HTTP.
Now, as people are prone to do on the internet, when I took a photo of her talk and I tweeted it and I said, you know,
did
Chrome
get cross?
Don't get me started. Chrome is looking at removing the HTTPS scheme. A bunch of people lost their minds and they said, now people aren't going to be able to tell that the site is secure or not.
But this is kind of the point, because... And it might seem like a really picky thing to say, but what you said there is, like, tell if the site is secure or not. But what they'll actually be able to do is tell if it's insecure or not, right? Like, that's the... If 99% of sites are secure, we're conveying the same message, like, 99% of the time. But actually, you don't care. You only want to know about the other 1%.
And I think
that's why you want to know, because you want to know it's secure to know it's not insecure.
This is a bigger paradigm shift, and I think you've said this a number of times in your talks as well, where when we have enough services that are served over HTTPS all of the time, and HTTPS and quote-unquote secure, and we use that term a little bit liberally, granted, but when that whole premise becomes the norm, then it's the exceptions which become the things that we've got to highlight, which is the whole premise of showing negative visual indicators instead. And it will be interesting when we get to that point. And by your last stats, I think it was only still about a third of the top 1 million sites, rather, that are serving over HTTPS by default, right?
Yeah.
So we've still got, even within the top 1 million, and then it tails off well after that, we've still got two-thirds of websites we need to get secure by default. But for argument's sake, if we got to 60, 70%, you kind of wonder then whether you can start even more aggressively highlighting the insecure ones, flag those guys, maybe you make the not secure text red or something like that, I don't know.
Well, that's the ultimate goal, is because it's really interesting. Like, you deploy HTTPS right now, you want green padlocks, pretty things, and all of the special treatment. But if you screw that up, you can end up with like lots of red stuff.
Yep.
So you go to a website, broken HTTPS, cert has expired, whatever. It's like, stop, this might be insecure, the cert's expired. But then you just go to the HTTP version and the browser's like, that's cool.
Yeah,
right? And it's kind of weird.
Exactly.
That
it's upside down.
Broken HTTPS and HTTP right now get the same UI treatment, and they're essentially the same levels of security. So what they're doing is bringing HTTP to the equivalent of broken HTTPS, because they have the same security state, which is red warnings,
right?
Because there's a problem.
So I think this is sort of a little bit of a glimpse into the future, and your point about there being a Chrome flag as well, where you can start turning off a lot of these visual indicators, which is the sort of glimpse into how it might be in the future, is important. It's interesting how unintentionally so much of what we've just covered has sort of been linked together, because this whole thing about EV is just visual indicators, and we're saying let's get rid of them. I can imagine some organizations being a little unhappy if you got rid of EV visual indicators. And, you know, this sort of premise of confusion around what's represented, what it means, etc. It just seems that we're in a much better position if we get to the point where we know that everything is served securely, we know that we've got integrity and confidentiality and all this sort of stuff, and exceptions become really aggressively highlighted.
Yeah.
That seems like the sensible place to be, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a lot of other benefits that come with that as well. Because once we get to 51% of the web, then we can start changing defaults. We can start making optimizations. We can make better assumptions about connections, security, and I think that's the first step. And then after that, subsequent steps will become easier as well. So we'll start making progress faster once we tip the scale to the other side.
Sure. Okay, well, that sounds like we're heading in the right direction. Look, I think the last thing for me is my sponsor this week is Gold Security. So Gold Security has been around on my blog for ages, which is awesome. You're doing sponsorships as well now?
Yes, yeah.
Which is good. So I'm booked out for the year. So if you want to sponsor Scott Helm.
Sponsorship in 2018.
There we go. And I hope that you find that to be a nice way of getting rid of ads and things, and people enjoy less or seeing less. Well, mind you didn't have ads anyway, did you?
No, I trialed them and I
So you're just
I
cashing
them,
in.
Yeah.
That's different.
No.
But in fairness, things like the sponsorship spots have been great for me in terms of building rapport with companies like Gold Security, as well as a bunch of others. And I've certainly had a heap of organizations on there that have had products that I've used very extensively. And it's nice to see them there. So, man, I wish you luck on that.
Fingers crossed.
And I think that's about it. So given you now know what our bandwidth is like, I need to get this into my computer and edited so I can get it up in time to actually get it out today. So I think we should just sort of sit here and enjoy the sun and maybe get some more beer while it's uploading. And you're still going to be here next Friday. So if people like this and you want to see more Scott, maybe tell us what you want to hear. Like if there's something you want me to grill Scott about, if you remind him about the weather, ask him about visual indicators and browsers, we can do that too.
Oh yeah, I'll be here next Friday. That'd be good.
Still here. All right. Cool. Thanks for watching, guys.
See you later.